This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
From the Trackout Multimedia Studios just outside of Chicago, this is Inside Open Wheel. Hello, everybody. Jeremy Scott here with you. Holy cow, do we have a loaded show for you. First off, winner of the first two rounds, I should say, of the Coca-Cola Bottling Company Kokomo Indy Elite Series is Chris DeMerritt. We finally get a chance to sit down and talk with him. He leads the points going into Barber, but yeah, we're going to see what happens with that. Also, Dylan Christie joins us. He just signed up with Turn 3 Motorsport and USF 2000, and he was the vice champion last year of the F1600 championship with Team Pelfrey. And as always, we sit down with one of our favorite Canadians, Rob Howden, the Road to Indy Insider. So, as always, you can catch us on Facebook or Twitter at Inside Open Wheel, Google Voice 815-714-9260. Leave us a message. We'll play your voicemail back on the air for any questions you may have, or if you want to ask a question of our guest. Also, InsideOpenWheel@gmail.com is a great way to get a hold of us as well. As always, joining me is Charlie Ante, our driver analyst. Charlie's going to be joining us more and more throughout the season with interviews. So it's going to be fun. I'm excited because now we'll get a driver's perspective within the show instead of just hearing me left and right. But as you and I talked about, Charlie, on what was it, Monday, Tuesday, some huge news coming out of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway in terms of a new team and a driver that we haven't seen on the circuit in 6 years.
Do you want me to say what it is?
I think you're about as excited as I am, so I'm gonna let you say it.
It's an all women's team. Simona Di Silvestro is coming back. Did they announce any other drivers, or was it just her for now?
Right now, it's going to be a one car effort. They're teaming with Team Penske. It's going to be a Chevrolet powered car, so at least she won't be bogged down by a Lotus this time.
Yeah, it'll be a good thing to see. I have to confess, I didn't watch the entire announcement, so I'm a bit rusty on the details.
So they're gonna run one race in which is the Indianapolis 500. But Beth Peretta did say that they're hoping to run more races. It all depends on sponsorship, and this is with the goal of running full time next year. For those who don't know Beth Peretta, she's been in the sport for years, and what I remember her most as she was with SRT Motorsport. And I've had nothing but respect for her. She also tried to start Grace Motorsport in 2016. If you remember that, Catherine Legg was supposed to be the driver, but they couldn't get the funding. So they decided, you know, it's just better not to do it than to just do a half shod effort. So this is going to be a great effort. And really, in my opinion, this just goes to show that Roger Penske continues to put his money where his mouth is. We saw in a matter of the past couple of months, he was going to start the race for diversity, then Force Indy with his backing comes on. Now we're seeing a full-fledged NTT IndyCar Series team with his backing. So this is great for the sport.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. I hope it opens up avenues to reaching new fans. I think it's also interesting to kind of contrast what IndyCar has done with what Formula One has done. I mean, they made a big dog and pony show about we race as one and end racism, and then they announce a new race in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So it's great to see.
And here, in my opinion, there are only two female drivers who I think are fully qualified to get in a car and, you know, put it through its paces right away. One of them is obviously in the seat. The other is Catherine Legg. I'm not discounting any other female racers, but those are the two best for the sport right now. Would it be great to see Pippa Mann in the seat? Yeah, I think, you know, having her back in the Indy 500 would be fantastic as well. I want to see as many people who are able to race. I don't care what gender you are. I don't care what race you are. If you can get in a seat and race, damn it, get out there and give me four good laps.
Yeah, I think IndyCar has sort of been out on the front on this issue. I mean, female drivers are not anything new,
no.
At least in the last, you know, 15 years or so.
Yeah.
And even going back farther than that.
I guess to stop and think, we've had only, what, 1 year in the past 20 years where a female driver has not been in the Indianapolis 500 field, and that was last year, so.
Yeah, that's pretty remarkable.
It really is, but nonetheless, I'm excited for Simona. It's For those who haven't been following up with her career, she's been tapped as one of the Porsche factory drivers. I think she's supposed to be in Formula E. We're going to try and get either her or Beth Peretta on here in the next couple of weeks. So we'll let you know when that happens. And speaking of driver announcements, holy cow, did we get a ton this week. Here's what I have as my handy dandy spreadsheet comes up. We'll start things off in Formula 4. J. Howard Driver Development came out with two drivers, Seth Foley and Juju Noda. Note that name because I've got some side notes on that. Joshua Carr signs with Crosslink Kiwi Motorsport in FR Americas, just announced. Jordan Missig is also going to be running with FR Americas and Newman Wox Racing for his return campaign. Yuveen Sundamurthy runs for PAFS Motorsport in USF 2000. Nothing in Indy Pro 2000, but later on in our interview with Rob Howden, we'll find out what the story is with USF 2000. Junkos Racing suddenly all full at the Insting Ray, Rob, Toby, Sowry. Those are both in the, they're both in the field. Also, the long-awaited announcement, Linus Lundqvist is going to be racing with GRG with HMD Motorsport for the 2021 Indy Lights season. I'm really excited about that. Also, we got an announcement this week alongside the Peretta Autosport announcement that Ryan Hunter Ray is back for a full season. And Marco Andretti is going to step down, run the Indianapolis 500, possibly some select races. But he said there's some things outside IndyCar he wants to run. He wants to run with his cousin Jared Andretti in some races in IMSA. I think it's a good move because it gives Marco a chance to become a team owner. Oh, and by the way, when he was testing this week at Sebring, he may have hinted that a certain Canadian driver is going to be running number 29 for Andretti Harding Steinbrenner Autosport. Mayor Hinchtown? So, yes, that's on his, it was on his Instagram stories. I can't remember if I'm going to go back and see if I have it on my Twitter page. If not, it's going to be tweeted there. Also, Carlin Racing was out at Sebring testing the number 31 with Max Chilton. I fully expect an announcement in the next couple of weeks that he'll be running the 500 and select road courses. Who's going to be running the ovals for him? I'm not sure. Testing came out. Monday was Scott Dixon fastest. Shocking. They day one. Everybody's making a big deal out of Jimmy Johnson being, 1.9 seconds off the pace. Here's the thing. If he wasn't testing in Dan Mitchell's car, I think he'd be further off the pace. I think 1.9 seconds for his first time testing with everybody is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put too much stock in testing times. I mean, he's probably, even with as much experience as he has, he's probably like drinking from a fire hose.
Oh yeah.
And he's gonna absorb a lot of it between now and the season opener.
And if there's anybody that I anticipate to really take it all in, it's Jimmy Johnson. So
yeah, it's gonna be fascinating to see what happens.
All right. So also, Alexander Rossi was fastest in day two of practice over there at Sebring, and he went over across the way and decided to shake down the prototype that he's going to run with Wayne Taylor Racing at the Rolex 24. So let's continue on with HPD and FRA news real quick. There was some news over the week that the winner of the FR Americas Championship was going to have a $600,000 scholarship to go race in Japan at the Super Formula title. For those who don't know what Super Formula is, it is the premier Japanese open wheel racing series, basically the equivalent of IndyCar. It is the IndyCar of Japan, except they don't run ovals because I don't think they run anything competitively on the Motegi Oval after that got destroyed in the earthquake several years ago.
Yeah, I don't think that they've repaired that at all.
I think they don't. I think the only time they use it is that front stretch for Honda Thanks Day that they have for their employees. Mm-hmm. So the details behind it, according to HPD, are that the winner gets a $600,000 scholarship. Hold on a second. You get things handed to you, and then they just kind of mess with your computer a little bit. Okay, so it is a pathway to the 2022 Super Formula Series $600,000 championship, scholarship. Honda's going to choose a team, and you know the drivers got to figure out the room, board. You know they'll get to go to the Honda Museum, Honda Thanks Day. The champion prize winner will be responsible for travel, living, and immigration logistics. But they will get to go to an IndyCar race. I'm going to admit, at first I was vehemently against it because I'm thinking, wait a second. You have Honda leaving Formula One and a pathway. If you want to go to Super Formula, you want to race, you know, obviously in Formula One. We've seen a lot of IndyCar drivers come that route. So I'm thinking, well, why are they doing that? You know, they're investing in IndyCar. So, okay, why can't that money be better used to be the engine supplier, quote unquote, for Indy Lights? That way you have a straight path. You have F4, FRA. If you don't want to run, you know, USF 2000 or Indy Pro 2000, though, why wouldn't you? Because you get to spend more time in the IndyCar paddock, but to each their own. And then that leads you on, you know, if you win the FRA championship, okay, well, then you just go to Indy Lights. So now you're bailing the Indy Pro 2000 champion and other drivers throughout the world to get to IndyCar. Because there are some drivers in FRA who want to run in IndyCar.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting sort of, I don't want to say it sort of reveals Honda's priorities a little bit. I mean, it makes sense from a certain point of view for them to bring someone over into Japan.
Right.
So I have to confess, I don't know anything about the motorsports landscape in Japan. So I've heard good things about the Super Formula series,
yeah,
but I don't really know much about it myself.
I don't
know how much attention it gets in sort of the mainstream Japanese press. But you know, maybe the board of directors at Honda decided that they want to increase their market share or their brand awareness or something, or they want to redirect funding into sort of internally in Japan. I don't know, maybe that this is a manifestation of that, just sort of speculation.
Well, we also know that Dallara is the official chassis supplier for Super Formula. Honda won the last championship with Naoki Yamamoto. And the puzzles me too is, Charlie, you know as well as I do that if you're absent from, you know, the media scape here in the States, wait, where were they? Where did they go? You know, they're totally forgotten about.
Mm-hmm.
There is no coverage of Super Formula here in the States unless you torrent something. I'm going to put this out there to anybody who's watching a Honda. If you want somebody to broadcast English stream, give me the stream. I'll call Super Formula Races so we can get more exposure to everybody here in the States, because I know people have been wanting to watch Super Formula for years. You know, it used to be Formula Nippon. Everybody's been itching for it. But it's a questionable move. I did reach out to the two team owners.
You know, I say this a lot whenever it comes to sort of accessing online content. I mean, if only we had some sort of global infrastructure or global network of computers that we could easily distribute content into people's living rooms, you know, that would be a great thing to have someday.
So anyway, as I was saying, I talked to a lot of team owners, and they... You know, hardly anybody got back to me. Some off the record saying, you know, may not be a good idea, but there was one that did get off on the record with me. It was Jay Howard. So first of all, he will have some cars in FR Americas. Here's what he said. He said, some people have been critical of the prize. At the end of the day, it's $600,000 worth of racing that you don't get if you're racing elsewhere in the world outside of the USA. Here in the States, it is the best place to be to make a career for yourself. I kind of agree with that. So while I don't like the decision, I see why Honda's doing it. What's happening here in this U.S.? I guess because I'm looking at, look, we have a great ladder system here in the United States to get, you know, to funnel drivers to, you know, IndyCar. And maybe there might have been some problems with Linus Lundqvist and having his scholarship, you know, translated from SCCA Pro to IndyCar. You know, we may know that down the line. Right now, that's not something we know. Maybe that's why Honda decided to make that decision. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens. It's a huge jump to go from FR, which is essentially a lower power, you know, a lower based F3, original F3 series, to Super Formula, which is almost like an IndyCar series.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if is there Is there like an Indy Lights for the Super Formula Series?
There is, but let's see here. Let's double check that because I do believe there is. Yes, there's Super Formula Lights. So we'll see if that happens. There's also the FR Japanese Championship. So there's options.
I mean, I guess the biggest conundrum about it is, like you said, whoever wins that championship or gets that scholarship is going to fall off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
And so I don't, like, if I'm trying to get to IndyCar, I mean, yes, it's great experience, but you're going to have to put a lot of effort into keeping people's eyes on you as you're performing there.
Yep. So time will tell. I'm sure we'll have more information as it becomes available from Honda. Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, we're going to have more news and notes. As I said, it's a packed week.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
And continuing with news and notes with Charlie Ante, we go back on the diversity slant because Pirelli Motorsports Holdings launches PMH Powering Diversity Scholarship for F4 US and FR Americas. If you were listening earlier, I mentioned to remember the name of Juju Noda. This is part of the reason why. From a press release from Pirelli Motorsports Holdings and SCCA Pro, after taking commercial ownership of both Honda-powered F4 US and FR Americas championships at the beginning of the year, Pirelli Motorsports Holdings will now introduce a new scholarship program with the goal to create a more diverse field of Formula drivers at the grassroots level. This will include entry fees to all series test days and 7 championship events from PMH, a season-long fuel stipend from Sunoco, and a parts voucher from Ligier. Also, the scholarship program will align drivers with a team of executives and mentors like former Legends of Open Wheel Series guest Willie T. Ribbs. This is going to be interesting, and I'm excited because, you know, if you sat down and listened to the Willie T. Ribbs episode, you know how cool Willie is, and I think he's going to give a wealth of experience to whoever comes on, and I like that now Tony Pirelli is putting his money where his mouth is and really investing big time in F4 and FRA.
Yeah, so do you know how exactly it's going to work? Are they going to have like a scholarship shootout or something?
No, from the press release, that's a good question. Hold on, let's go back a second paragraph. To support diversity and inclusion in junior single-seater category, PMH is partnered with Sunoco Race Fuels, Lee J Automotive, to award one talented up-and-coming minority or female driver in each championship starting 2021. I don't think those details have come out. Well, I'll shoot an email out to PMH and see what we can come up with. But if you have something, email us insideopenwheel@gmail.com. So.
Very well.
But nonetheless, hopefully this all works out. And I have a feeling that this Juju Noda news is a part of that. And it'll help, you know, encourage more drivers in the series. Speaking of, we are hearing that tomorrow, Friday, if you're listening after Friday, there are rumblings that there's going to be a conference call with the series and the drivers and owners about possibly changing the 2 F4 FRA dates that are earlier in the season. The tracks that I have heard from a reliable source are Road America, Watkins Glen, and Mid-Ohio that could replace Sonoma and WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca.
Is this those two races that were back-to-back weekends?
Yes, those are those two races back-to-back weekends. My understanding is part of it's obviously because what's going on in California with the coronavirus, and part of it also is the teams want better prep so that way they can, you know, logistically go out there. But here's the thing. I think it's great that PMH is moving the series out west. I wish they could have done one race at a time. So do, you know, one race at Sonoma 1 year. If that worked out, okay, then you go to two races next year.
Yeah, I think, like I said the other episode, having back-to-back races is a complete nightmare.
Yeah. Oh, so, you don't have to tell me that.
Yeah, I'm sure the teams were raising hell about it.
Also, speaking of rescheduling, we can say here that there's been rumblings. Been hearing a little bit of a Richter scale of a possible rescheduling of IndyCar at Barber Motorsports Park. Not a cancellation this time, but a possible rescheduling. So we're going to follow up on that and give you more information as it becomes available. Before we let you go into our interviews today, we have SCCA Hoosier Tour, Super Tour Open Wheel results. A lot of double winners this weekend. We'll start off with Saturday. James Wieda wins an F500. Keith Jocelyn and Russell Strat Jr. take up the podium. Ken Terrell wins an Atlantic Championship, Ashton Yelkin and Yasek Muka round out the podium. In Continental, Robert Allier, Nolan Allier, and Dean Kerlick are your podium finishers there. Formula Enterprises, Russell Turner, Owen McAllister, and Bailey Monette take the podium there. Hugh Esterson, Misha Goikberg, and John Robinson II, they're on the podium for Formula F, or Formula Ford if you're more like me. Kris Jenner, John, win.
Or Formula 1600.
Well, you know. Some of us, whatever. And I'm not even going to go down that road because some of us aren't purists and snobs like our co-host. Anyway.
I mean, I'm just saying they've got more names than entries sometimes.
I know. Kris Jenner, John wins in Formula V, rounded out the podium. Stephen Davis and Jeff Flipkowski. Charlie, a friend of yours and mine, wins FX in his Elan DP08. It's Bob Wright. James Goffrey takes his Honda Crawford-powered Honda F4 to P2, and Steve Shelton takes his Pro FM to third place. On Sunday, James Wieda, Jack Walbrand, and Russell Strat Jr. round out the podium there. Merle Swan takes a Swift 014 to the top step at Sebring with Mike Jackson, Ashton Yelkin to either side of him. Robert Allier, Nolan Allier, and Joe Colosico will take the podium in Formula Continental FE. It's Russell Turner, Paul Schneider, Lee Rackley, your top three. Josh Pearson, Hugh Easterson, and Joe Colosico are your top three in Formula F 1600, Ford, Honda, whatever you want to call it, the wingless series. Mitchell Ferguson, Kris Jenner, John, and Jeff Lipkowski take the top three in FV. Bob Wright sweeps the two races at Sebring for FX in his Elan DP08. Hartley McDonald and Steve Shelton Jr. round out your podium. So, very busy weekend at Sebring. We'll get I believe next month is the next Hoosier Super Tour round, but we're going to start covering some SCCA Super Tour stuff, especially since the runoffs are at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. We're waiting on Formula Race Promotions to announce their drivers. I did put a page out to one of the series officials. I said, can you tell people to announce stuff? He goes, yeah, I'll work on it. So that's the show. Charlie, you got anything coming up?
Well, I just popped into my head that this weekend is actually the iRacing 24 Hours of Daytona.
Oh, yes.
So I'm going to be jumping into that with a couple of friends. I'm sure we're going to be in one of the, there's probably going to be dozens and dozens of splits going on at the same time. And we're probably going to be somewhere in the middle. But I'm not really sure where the top split is going to be broadcast, but I'm sure it'll be somewhere.
I can say this. Fernando Alonso, Tony Kanaan, and Rubens Barrichello are going to be in a prototype. So just be aware.
In the iRacing one,
yes.
Awesome. Yeah. They're probably not going to be in my split.
No, they won't be in your split. No way. So,
but we're going to have to get you a wheel sometime before Sebring so we can do the 12 hours together.
You know, I'd love to do that. I need to get that. I need to get iRacing sponsorships inside openwheel@gmail.com. Fantech, if you're listening, please. Come on. Next couple weeks for Inside Open Wheel are going to be pretty busy. I can tell you that right now. So you're going to want to definitely stay tuned to find out who's going to be on next week's show, because I'm really excited to see who's on there, and I owe you all too. Coming up next, he's won the first two races in the Coca-Cola Bottling Company of Kokomo Indy Elite Series. He's Chris DeMarin. He's the points leader, and he's next.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Well, it's a little upset that we couldn't get this next guest on. We're covering the Coca-Cola Bottling Company Kokomo Indy Elite Series, Indy1909.com 150. Man, that's a mouthful, but I love covering these guys. Such a good racing, some of the best sim racing you'll see out there on anywhere on the internet. He was the winner of now the first two rounds. So he won the first one, the Inside Open Wheel 225, and now he won the second one. Leads the points going into Barber Motorsports Sports Park. It's Chris Demerit. Chris, first of all, congratulations, and I've got to say, good job getting through that final wreck there at turn four.
Yeah, thank you. Luckily, I had a bunch of teammates looking out and, you know, told me to basically stop, because otherwise I probably would have gone cartwheeling into that one too. But yeah, that was a very interesting way to end the race. But I'm glad it turned out the way it did.
I want to talk to both of you guys, because one thing that I was surprised at, and I've seen a lot of races at Phoenix in real life, that was more of a wreck fest than I anticipated.
Yeah. I mean, when you have... Yeah, you go ahead.
For iRacing standards, I think that was pretty calm.
I was going to say, you kind of spent time at the back, so let's get your thoughts on it, Charlie.
I just sort of tagged the wall a couple times just from careless driving. I was literally just trundling around in last place trying to pick up places from cars that crashed. I looked at the time of the race, and it was a little over an hour. And I remember having another race in the public IndyCar series that was half the number of laps, but it was almost an hour and a half just from all the full course yellows. So I think we had six that race. And, I guess that's one of the benefits of racing in a league like the Elite Series, is that people sort of respect each other a bit more.
Yeah, I could see that. I've got to say, Charlie, I messaged you after the race because I was kind of paying attention to that, and my wife had me watching SpongeBob with her, but that's besides the point. That was your second best avoiding a crash moment. The first one obviously being the viral Montreal crash save.
No, this one was a lot easier because I had plenty of time to slow down, so I was just crawling through the wreckage.
If you get a chance, look on Charlie's YouTube page and you'll see what I'm talking about. All right, so Chris, let's talk about your two wins. You've had a pretty good car the past couple of races. What has been the setup changes that you're able to get up near the front for both races?
I mean, since we've had this new tire model roll out, I think we're only 6 weeks into it now, so we're still really just learning everything. And it's just really just time put in to figure out what the new tire likes and doesn't like, and that's pretty much it. It's just kind of time in, and I mean, everyone at i5G kind of knows kind of how to adapt to a car, so we've been working on it a lot. But I mean, I don't think there's a specific secret about this car that we figured out or anything. It's just kind of doing some experimenting and figuring out what direction we should be going with the setups. And I mean, for Homestead and Phoenix, really, I mean, especially the aerodynamics is pretty much especially for Phoenix, it was kind of just everyone puts on the maximum rear wing you're allowed to do because it's still pretty low and just kind of go from there. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure we'll learn a ton more as the season goes on, and there'll be probably, if we ever go back to Homestead and Phoenix anytime soon before the next season, we might be able to find a little bit more time as we figure out the car a little bit more.
And we'll talk more about the next race at Barber Motorsports Park, but talk about the two races preceding that. Let's talk about Homestead at first. So much has happened between now and then for some of us here in the news world of motorsports, but let's go through the Homestead race. How did that feel with it being the very first race? I know Charlie in the last week's show said it actually felt like a real race.
Yeah, it was these league races, and I mean, when there's a ton of people in them too, you know, we have 33 plus. I think we had 40 start in the Homestead race. It was a bunch. So I mean, the pressure and the whole atmosphere of being competitive is definitely there. Not that I can talk from experience from being in an actual race, but it's definitely competitive and everyone's kind of on pace and yeah, it's definitely is I'm sure it's entertaining from a spectator standpoint of view too.
You can feel the pressure that an event is about to happen.
Oh yeah, it's always there's always deep breaths and trying to calm yourself down when you're taking the grid.
And especially since it's, you know, it's the first race of the season, so everyone's sort of fancying their chances of how the season's going to go. So that, put that on top of everything else.
And not to mention, Chris, you also had you also were able to gamble on fuel strategy. How did you get so lucky to think, okay, you know, maybe this might work, and then all of a sudden, you know, there was a yellow, so it worked. At Homestead.
For
sorry.
Homestead?
Yeah, for Homestead.
I mean, there were a few times where fuel strategy looked like it was going to come into play, and I started to play into that. It wasn't anything as aggressive as the last one, though. And the last one was really a mistake because it started from the fact that I forgot to fill up the tank of fuel in the car. So I only had enough for like 5 laps or something left. It was pretty bad. Or maybe it was like 10 laps. It definitely wasn't. We still had like, I think 50, 40 laps to go or something like that. So nowhere near being close. And yeah, it was either I run out the rest of the tank, and I mean, I took tires, so at least it'd be fast and light, but it was either that and do a short stint, and then I have to drive through the rest of the field that hasn't pit yet, because you'll come out like 10 seconds behind where you were on track, yeah, basically. So that sounded like a bad idea. Which is kind of the reason why it ended up working out to save fuel, because I basically the people at the front who are 10 seconds ahead of me, once they do their pit stop, they come back to me. So basically I could like fall through the field twice and save fuel. So that definitely worked out in my favor, but was not intentional.
And this is where you see the benefits of my strategy of being 7 laps down. That's 7 laps less fuel that I have to carry.
Yeah.
Talent, buddy. Talent. Anyway, you know, this past week of the IndyCar1909.com 150. It, you know, like we said, there were some incidents, but you were able to stay near the front. You had a good qualifying lap. You led qualifying for quite some time, and then you ended up losing it there at the last couple of seconds. But still, front row start at Phoenix really isn't too bad.
No, it wasn't too bad. And I mean, Phoenix qualifying is just so high commitment, really. And I mean, Philip and I still had, what was it, almost a tenth and a half on the second row, so that was a pretty good showing. And I think we both had a little bit more in it. And then yeah, I mean the race went pretty well too. Kind of started on the, I wanted to be in out front in the lead because I knew how hard it was going to be passed, but I mean, I'm still happy with the result of ending up pulling it off. But yeah, between me, Phil, and Adam, it was going to be pretty close.
It seems like that this point in the season, you know, we were 2 races in, but it looks like that we're starting to see we're starting to see the players. You know, it's you, Adam Blocker, you know, Andreas Eick, Cahoe, Kinsella, constantly at the front, even though it's the ovals. Do you think that's going to translate over into the road courses?
There will definitely be a correlation between the two. I'll tell you right now, I'm nowhere near as strong on the road courses as I am on the ovals. So I'm not expecting to be like way at the back, but I'll be, you know, shooting for top fives instead of podiums on the road courses, just kind of keep it clean. But I mean, a lot of these guys, like Blocker, is really, really good on the road courses. Kinsella is always good at the road courses, so it'll shuffle the field around a little bit. But I think you'll generally see people who are fast will be at the front. I think the exact order will change, but that's usually how the road and the oval stuff goes, is there's usually kind of two, you can kind of have like two different lists of tiers of drivers for each, and you kind of just kind of have to go with that rather than like over for the overall season almost.
Now I remember that I think in the interview Blocker said that he probably won't be racing at Barber because he's got real life commitments, but he said something. I want to ask you this, something to the effect of that he thinks you'll be getting a penalty of some sort because of contact during the race.
Yeah, that'll be, I've already tried to make my case against that to the admins, but there's a, you'll get, basically an end of line penalty at the beginning of the rate of the next week, for like avoidable contact or that kind of thing. I mean, there were some that were like the Kingsbury's got some, last week in Homestead, which is why both of Matt and Ray, like, I think they qualified like fifth and seventh or something. And then they had to start from all the way back. So they were through the entire race, they were marching forward. And yeah, he said about my, incident with, Tony, cause I just made the pass on Adam and I was looking towards, Tony and I saw him. I was, you know, making a good deal of progress on him down the front stretch. And, a lot of the lap cars were just like staying completely high in the corner, just to let us by. And I just assumed that he was going to do the same thing just by what the closing rate was. But he turned in. So I hit the brakes and I was just didn't react in time and kind of nicked the back of him and sent him into the wall. So, that's the incident that he was talking about.
I saw the replay on that, and it's just a split second, but he does turn in a little bit late. So it was completely understandable why you would think that he was sort of taking the high line and letting you get the inside.
It was definitely, I look back at it and I don't think I did anything stupid, but, avoidable contact is what the admins think it is. So, I'll see whether or not I get a penalty for next week anyway.
Well, we'll end on that bombshell. Nonetheless, you've won twice so far. You lead the points, so hopefully you can get a good showing at Barber Motorsports Park. Chris Samarit, thanks for joining us, and hopefully we'll have you on again later on the season.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, we sit down and talk with Dylan Christie. He's going to run his rookie campaign in USF 2000 with Turn 3 Motorsport next.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
One of the driver announcements that we mentioned last week on our show, the guest is with us right now. If you were listening to last week's show, you heard me preview it. But we talked last in September when he just got done with his USF 2000 test. And this correlates with an Illinois-based team, Turn 3 Motorsport, run by Peter Dempsey, standout in his own right when he was in the Road to Indy ladder. And now Turn 3 has gone to USF 2000. So they'll run two in USF 2000, and we do believe they're going to run two cars in Indy Pro 2000. We know of at least one car that will be running, courtesy of our co-host. But this driver was a standout in the S1600 championship last year, and he is one of the drivers for Turn 3 Motorsports, Dylan Christie. Dylan, congratulations. I know you and I talked off the air a while ago, and I've got to say this. Right now, there's no better USF 2000 team to be with right now than Turn 3 because you have such a great nucleus within that trailer.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, I'm so happy to have this opportunity to be racing with such an awesome team. The experience throughout the whole team, between Richard Lyons and Peter Dempsey and the entire team, and not just their experience, but their the motivation to win and their focus on driver development is exactly what I need for this upcoming season.
And it's going to be an interesting season as well. We're watching, you know, driver announcements roll in. It's looking pretty like it's going to be a stacked season. We're going to talk more with Rob Howden here in our next segment. But let's talk about, last time we talked was your USF 2000 test. So let's talk about where, between then and now, how you came to connect with the Turn 3 Motorsport team.
So there's been a lot of growth, a lot of development since then. I believe since we last talked, I finished up the F1600 season. I finished second in that, which was a good way to end the year. And then our focus had just been on USF testing. And, it was a bit of a different focus. There's a bit less draft pack racing in the USF car, but a lot more focus on, you know, what driving by yourself in a sort of way and improving your speed and your lap times and searching for those extra tenths. And I know that turn three values, all those things, and that'll be a great thing to go into for this upcoming year. I have a lot of confidence in how things are going and the testing that I'm going to have preseason and have had already will make it, we'll make sure we're prepared for the season, which is something I'm really happy with. It's going to be fun. My teammate for the year, Josh Green, is someone who I had been with from karting. Or who I'd raced with in karting. You know, another thing that's going to make the team environment pretty good. So I think that'll be a really good sort of environment for the year.
And we'll talk about Josh Green a little bit too, but, you know, Charlie and I previewed this last month, and Charlie's like, oh, no. Teams get cars all the time to run, you know, different cars. But what was that like talking to Peter when he was starting to say, you know, yeah, I'm going to do this USF 2000 series?
Well, I know they've had tons of success in Pro 2000, and they've shown they can run a good team, and that, you know, with their experience, they perform well and you know, I mean, they're showing their success in Pro 2000 gives me a lot of confidence in the USF program.
Yeah, especially their first year when they came out and they basically won, you know, which you hardly ever do in any kind of competition. But really knowing Peter as long as I have and knowing how well he runs an operation, that's no surprise. So to see, you know, I'm not going to lie, you know, I'm anticipating both you and Josh up near the front. And you said that you've known Josh since karting. So that's got to be more of a natural fit to be in a team where you already know the co-driver and you're confident in the abilities of the team itself.
Yeah, that's something that I'm really looking forward to for the year, is just a great team environment where we all know that we not only have the experience, but we have the drive to put in the effort and put in our best each and every time we go out to the track and even in preseason to make sure that when we're on the track, when we're in the cars, that everything's as it should be. We're all prepared and we can go out and win.
Dylan Christie joins us here on Inside Open Wheel. He's running with Team Turn 3 Motorsport for this 2021 USF 2000 season. And a lot of that has to go down to, a lot of that has to go down to running with Team Palfrey last year. We're not discounting Team Palfrey because they are one of the top 1,600 teams in all of motorsports, especially here in North America.
I think Team Palfrey, you know, they really helped me a lot in S1600, and they were really good for my development. You know, being able to improve and learn that process of going through a race weekend and the focus on data and video and using all that off track time to make sure our improvement for the going into a race weekend and each session is where it should be. And I know turn three in a similar way emphasizes that development more so than anything else, which is exactly what I need going into my first year in this series. You know, it's a big step up competition wise. And I know that if I just focus on my development, making sure I'm improving each race day and each race weekend, that I'll leave the season better off than when I started, which is the goal.
And one thing that's going to help you out is the test time that you're going to get at Turn 3 Motorsport as well. They're right by a facility that has, you know, open test time. So you're going to be able to, get that seat time in the USF 2000 car and get used to a car with wings.
Yeah, that's a big difference from the 1600 racing, but having driven the car, it all made sense from what I had done in 1600 and even karting. It's a different vehicle, but it's just another learning process, and having just another learning process to learn from and improve off of. I don't think that'll be anything of a concern. I think that'll be another way to help me learn and improve.
And, you know, not to mention, too, the competition steps up. We've talked about that. But the intensity steps up, too, because you're in the same paddock as guys, you know, who run in, you know, Indy Lights, the IndyCar Series. So you're going to have team owners who are going to have their eyes on you from the get-go.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole new part of the road to Indy is that, you know, all the other series that come with it, the fact that you run with IndyCar, I mean, it's all new things to me, but all experiences I'm very, very happy and grateful to be a part of.
And not to mention also you run the St. Petersburg Grand Prix, so there's one street race. So, you know, that also adds into it. Let's talk more about basically outside of racing, what you've done this off season, how you're preparing to get ready for your next season. You know, what's that been like for you mentally preparing, knowing that you have a ride for next year or this year?
You mean as far as like preparation,
yeah.
Like preseason, what I've been
doing? Yeah, preseason prep, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's kind of the game is making sure you're prepared for the season because, you know, once you're at the track, you know, you have the same amount of time as everyone else in a race weekend. So I've been putting a lot of emphasis on what I'm doing to prepare for the season. Not just physical training, which, you know, of course is so important in these cars. I mean, they're tiring. So, making sure you're putting in your training for many hours a day is something I've been doing. And, also the sim driving too. I mean, I know some people find that useful, others don't, but I find it incredibly useful. Not only just going on by myself, but going on with the team as well. And using that to learn about the team, learning through the process of going through a race weekend. You know, I think of sim driving as sort of, if physical training is the way to make sure you're physically prepared, I think of the simulator as the way to get, mentally prepared for a race weekend. You know, the muscle memory of hitting a brake pedal, you know, something as small as that, or something as big as, making a setup change to a car and feeling what it does. I find that's incredibly useful. And now that I have the off season and grateful enough to have the nice enough simulator to really make it of good use, I'm going to be on that a lot, making the most use of it as I can, so that when I get in the real car, there's no rust to knock off. I'm all up to speed and used to how things are.
And I do want to touch on the sim racing as well, because with us covering the Indy Elite Series, we now have, you know, a different batch of listeners. So, and it also helps too with Peter being so into sim racing himself. I know that he runs some sim races on the side. So having that extra tool in your pocket to where the owner's like, okay, yeah, you know, try this, and this, you know, in the simulator, and he can go back and look at that. That's got to be even better.
Yeah, for sure. I'm going to start running that Elite Series. I'm going to do it's the USF 2000 at Long Beach. It's this Friday, the 22nd, and I'm going to be doing that with Peter Dempsey and Josh Green. That's going to be another way to for, you know, good team building, just improvement and getting used to that mentality of the race weekend. Hopefully we're able to keep practicing, and also we'll be doing the Road to Indy E-Series. It'll be a nice way to practice a race weekend and keep in touch with racing.
Yeah, that's one thing that has been really great throughout this offseason, you know, since, you know, obviously the COVID pandemic knocked out some things last year, is seeing that now a lot of the series are starting to also say, you know, this would be good warm up to the season or something for the offseason to get people interested. So I applaud this whole, you know, the sim racing, you know, being a supplement to the real deal, not in replacement of.
Yeah, for sure. If you have good simulator products to use for it, and then you can get on iRacing and make sure you have the right cars that are similar to what you're driving in real life. It's a big tool. I think once you understand sim racing, what's different from real life and what's similar, it can be a really useful tool. Not just getting quick, but the process of getting quick. Starting off maybe not understanding it and then getting to the point where you could run quick, not just quick, but consistent laps is going to be a really important tool, since it's a lot easier than track time. Since track time is so valuable, you want to make sure you're staying sharp whenever you're not on track.
And I remember when iRacing first came out, you know, you had R Factor, then you had iRacing, and a lot of the drivers at the time were like, well, you know, you don't get that seat of the pants experience. That's right, but at the same time, you learn the layout of the track, and then when you get out there, that's when you get that seat of the pants experience.
Right, exactly. So, you know, I hear a lot like, oh, you don't get the same, like, feel, like the G-forces as you would in a real car, and that's true, but think about everything you are getting, you know, that the once you go into depth and once you look at the data of the sim driving compared to the real driving, the detail that goes into things like the brakes and you know, it's the balance of the car, the science behind making those cars in the game, and then how that applies and how that's so similar to real life. I mean, it's so useful what is so similar, what they've gotten so accurate to being what it's like in real life.
Well, how can fans follow up with your exploits throughout this 2021 season?
So I'd say the best way to follow what I'm doing is my Instagram, Dylan Christie Racing. But I've also made a new website that's recently grown up where I'll be putting this podcast and some other stuff for people to check out. So DylanChristieRacing.com, you can check that out. And I'd say those are the two best ways to follow up on what I've been doing.
Man,
I'm looking forward to the season.
Man, I'm so excited for you. Really happy that you paired up with Peter and the whole gang over there at Turn 3 Motorsport. Really looking forward to seeing your progress this year in USF 2000. Good luck, Dylan Christie, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Yeah, thanks, Jeremy. Thanks for having me. I really like being on this podcast and talking about what I'm doing to prepare for the season.
I can't wait, man. Coming up next, also, another Road to Indy slant with Rob Howden. We talk about his new position, and we continue talking about the Road to Indy E-Series next on Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Well, last month we talked about a new position with one of our good friends here on Inside Open Wheel. He is one of our many insiders that we have. So we welcome the Road to Indy insider, Mr. Rob Howden. And Rob, you're going to be doing a lot more within the series, which, as you and I have talked about off and on all the time, this is a fantastic fit. So first of all, congratulations, bud.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate it. We were actually at our team summit, the staff summit in December, and the opportunity came to me to be able to join the Road to Indy in a much deeper fashion than just being the voice of the program. I signed on as their series development director. Really, it ends up being a liaison between the drivers, the teams, the families. It just is a really good fit for what I already do.
And it really is, especially because you know a lot of these drivers coming up through karting. One of them is Charlie Ante, who's joining us as well. And Charlie, as usual, anytime you want to butt in, go ahead. But this has been, you know, these past couple months, it's been great because, you know, you see people from around the community go out to you on social media and say, that's the person we want to do this job. Nonetheless, first of all, I do want to mention we can thank the Santa Ana Winds. Normally, Rob's joining us on a VOIP, but he's going to be over the phone, so we may have some difficulties with Rob. But nonetheless, how's been transitioning into this new position? And for those who don't know about this, what exactly is the official title for you?
Yeah, indeed, my title is the Series Development Director. So essentially, my job with the program is to liaison with teams, drivers, families, that kind of thing, driver recruiting. So just everything that we need to do to make sure the drivers understand the value of coming to the Road to Indy over other programs, right? There's just so many good things that are involved in the Road to Indy. We want to make sure that the drivers who have IndyCar as a focus understand how to get into the program.
Charlie?
You know, something that I guess we can talk to you about a little bit later, we'll talk about it later. Sorry.
I was going to say, Charlie, this
I don't want to get ahead of myself too much.
This kind of affects you too, because you are essentially a car owner. You own a car, but you lease it to other teams.
Yes. I'm glad that we're able to have this chat, and I'm sure we'll talk off the air later, Rob. But yeah, I own one of Peter's cars, and So I have a very keen interest in what your plans are going forward.
Indeed, indeed. I saw your name on my tub tracking spreadsheet. So yes, I saw that. That's good. Good to have you on board.
So this is great. We're connecting two people together here on Inside Open Wheel. Next, we're going to do Love Life. No, we're not going to do that. Trust me. I got lucky 10 years ago with my love life. So we'll keep it at that. Now, also, this kind of helps you out because you also go out to car races and you call those. You were at the Rock Cup Florida this past weekend.
Yeah, you know, obviously one of my primary, my job, my career, my business is ecartynews.com, the website that has been around for the last 20-something years. We're the hub of kart racing on the internet, and I get the chance to announce normally around anywhere between 15 and 16 or 17 kart races a year, in addition to all the events I announce with the Road to Indy and, of course, the NTT IndyCar Series. I actually wasn't at the Florida Winter Tour race. I was the week before at down at Homestead Miami Speedway and their track down at the karting facility there for the opening round of the Supercarts USA Winter Series. And, you know, 201 entries, I think it was all total, some fantastic racing. And for a guy that does what I do in the Road to Indy, it gives me that head start and the knowledge on all the drivers who are coming up the karting ranks, right? I've had a chance to watch them since they were in cadet karting and get them to come all the way through the ranks. And that's why I have so much fun when I'm doing the IndyCar races, because I remember watching a James Hinchcliffe or a Graham Rahal or a Marco Andretti or Charlie Kimball, whoever it is, all those guys when they were first getting started karting in the late 90s and early 2000s.
Now, you're at Homestead the same weekend that SCCA Regional, no, it was a national event, the road course. Can you divulge any secrets for us on what may have happened?
Well, I'll tell you, because of what I was doing all weekend long, it was the races were running parallel, right? We're kind of on the outside of turn number one where the car track is there. So I was kind of in my announcer's booth from 9 o'clock in the morning till about 5 o'clock in the afternoon with a nice half-hour lunch break in the middle. That was about it. So the only thing I got really picked up on was I got a chance to go over on the Monday. The Lucas Oil School of Racing was there. They were running one of their two-day advanced schools. Had a chance to talk to Jeff Buescher from Team Pelfrey, and they had a fairly successful trip there as well. I talked to Josh Pearson, who ran last year in USF 2000 and will again this year, but moving over to Pabst Racing, he was there running an F1600 car. So there was a lot of young drivers in the F1600 program.
Charlie?
I'm not sure I have anything to add to that.
I was going to say, yeah, because Charlie being an F1600 competitor as well. So basically, this is just going to make things better for the Road to Indy between Anderson Promotions, IndyCar, and the drivers, because now they just have one person that they've known for years. They're able to come by and just say, you know, hey, I've got this going on. What can I do to improve on this?
Well, you know, I think this is it. You know, Johnny Baker had the position for a number of years before I did. He's moved on to focus on his company, Coforce. And, you know, we wish him the best. He's been amazing in the transition, helping me, bringing me up to speed of all the work that he's done. Because here's the thing. As the Road to Indy insider, I was connected to teams and drivers. And I knew a lot of the things were going behind the scenes. When you jump into a position like this where you're in a more official capacity, you learn even more because the team owners and drivers tell you more. Now, granted, there's another level of confidentiality where you hold things to yourself, but man, talk about pulling back the curtain and seeing a lot of stuff in behind. For me, again, Johnny did a tremendous job, and I thank him for the help he's given me transitioning into the position. But for me, it really just makes things connect from top to bottom, right? Because my announcing from karting all the way through IndyCar and being a pit lane reporter for IndyCar Radio gives me that connection. But now it's an even deeper connection with the drivers and the parents as they're trying to navigate their way up the ladder. You know, so many young drivers have that dream to go to IndyCar or Formula One or whatever it may be. And it's nice to have someone there who they know from top to bottom. And I'm going to get to be that person. So I'm hopefully going to be able to make the road a little smoother for some of those that are jumping in. Because for a family coming out of karting into car racing, man, there is a ton to learn. And I hope to kind of level that playing field out, make it a bit smoother. And then overall, you know, the title is Series Development Director. So we're going to take a lot of input from team owners, from families, from parents, from drivers, and try to see what we can do better to make the series better and better. And I spent a lot of time in this sport, and I really hope that I'm going to be able to make a really positive impact on the Road to Indy this year and, of course, years moving forward.
And I'm really excited.
Can I jump in there?
Yeah, go ahead.
Rob, you mentioned making things a little bit smoother. I was wondering if you have any sort of preliminary thoughts about what can be done, at least in the short term, or if you're still kind of hammering out the details.
Well, really, I used the term before that I was drinking water out of a fire hose, right? Because there was so much to learn. I've only really been in the position for about 6 weeks now, and we're right in the middle of the hotbed of the offseason with a lot of things happening. I've been very, very working in depth on the E-Series program, getting drivers lined up for that. That was part of the thing, of course, driver recruitment, not just for the Series, but for the E-Series as well. Right now, to be honest, Charlie, I'm just keeping my ear open and having conversations with team owners. And they're giving me, you know, little thoughts of, hey, this could be better. I would love to be able to do this. You know, one of the topics in the off season, of course, was testing regulations and restrictions. When are we able to test? And with the, with the movement of the start of St. Petersburg into the end of April, that has obviously, slowed our start. So a lot of conversations with team owners about how they would like to have seen the adjustment for testing. Because, you know, we had our spring training set for the week before St. Petersburg, in late February. So everything moving, we opened testing back up, changing the blackout dates, and just some of the, you know, really going over some of the fine tuning of when teams can test. And again, that's just one of the checklists, Charlie. There's so much stuff that I'm going to be dealing with, but right now, just trying to keep my ears open and be like a sponge in terms of getting a feel from the team owners of the little bit, the things that concern them and some of the stuff that they think could immediately be improved on, which I think is great.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds like a solid place to start.
And one thing I'm excited about, too, is nothing against Diane Swintall. You know, it was great to have her as a liaison for here for the show to go back and forth and say, hey, let's get this driver. But with Rob in this position, we're going to have more Road to Indy drivers on the show because it's going to get them interview ready for when they move up to Indy Lights, when they move up to IndyCar, because in some instances, that's the first time they have a microphone in front of their face. I mean, you still have the Road to Indy TV. Rob, I know you and I have both interviewed drivers on the IndyCar Radio Network when we've worked. So they get the experience, but now they're going to get a fuller experience with actually sitting down, doing a 15-minute or longer feature interview and getting to know these drivers a little bit better. So when they go to that next step of Indy Lights and IndyCar, they have that opportunity. They're not, you know, they're not Kimi Räikkönen where they're in there, you know, just giving 5-word answers. They're able to, get in there and give the fans what they want and, you know, be personable.
Well, connecting to the media, connecting to the public is key, right, Jeremy? And, yep. And here's the thing, you know, you and I can get them every once in a while on IndyCar radio, right? Pit lane interview between an IndyCar session, whatever it may be. But when we're talking about guys and girls coming up their USF 2000 Indy Pro, we all know about it. It's all about getting them as many laps as you can, right? Get lots of seat time. Well, just as good of having tons and tons of seat time is tons and tons of mic time. The more times they're interviewed, the more podcasts they're on, the more comfortable they're going to be, the easier they are going to be telling their story, the story of their sponsors, whatever it may be. So just like getting comfortable in the car, you need to get comfortable behind the mic. And a podcast like yours, I think, will be crucial for all these young drivers to really kind of fine-tune and hone their skills in terms of talking to media and the fan base.
All right, coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, we're going to talk about the upcoming TireRack.com Road to Indy E-Series.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
We're with the Road to Indy insider, Rob Houghton. He is also going to talk to us about the TireRack.com Road to Indy E-Series. Now, this is something that started last year in the throes of the pandemic when races were starting to get canceled. But, Rob, I've got to say this, and Charlie, you can chime in too. I think that this is a great warm-up. And this is something Dylan Christie and I talked about earlier in the show. This is a great warm-up for these kids because they're able to learn these layouts. I mean, granted, it's in a Pro Mazda, but PM18, I apologize, but they're still able to learn it.
You know, I think there's a lot of components with the E-Series that work really well. You know, the key for us, and I think we kind of got a feel for this and learned a bit about this during this offseason, was the first two series that we did a two separate series during the lockdown. The drivers were, in fact, locked down. They were at home. They were at their sims. So we had, you know, we had guys that were focused on going racing. They wanted to get out there and do something. So we played around with the first time. We did the broadcast with Apex Racing TV. It's live on Rev TV in Canada. This is a little different right now. And I think we kind of all got going like, yeah, we were going to get everybody on board. Everybody's going to be super excited. Literally, of the paddock in the road to India, kind of half of the guys were like, well, I don't have a sim. I'm not really interested right now. Or the other half were like, yeah, let me get at it. We've got over 30 drivers signed up for this particular race. To me, I look at it in different angles. Yeah, awesome to have new people coming into the road to Indy to get a chance. They're all going to get to use the sim whenever they want and drive the racetracks. For me, it's racing against drivers they could be racing against during the year. Plus, our race, you know, the Indy Pro 2000 race director, Johnny Unser, is our race director for the Road to Indy as well. So they're going to learn a lot of stuff when it comes to dealing with the race director, because he officiates the race just like it would be a regular race. So that's big. On the side of the series, Jeremy, we're trying to expand it out a little bit, right? So drivers that are looking at the Road to Indy, we're bringing them in as well. Dylan Christie's a perfect example. I had contacted Dylan to be in the E-Series before I knew that he was going to be locked in racing with Turn 3 Motorsports in the series. So that was a really kind of a cool deal where, hey, he's already coming in. But we're picking up drivers from F1600. We got drivers from Canadian F1600, some F4 drivers. There's different competitors who are really looking at the Road to Indy, and we're giving them an opportunity to kind of get into the program right now, a little bit early. And last but not least, we've connected with the World Karting Association. They have their own esports program. They're going to run the USF 2000 car, and then we're going to graduate their driver. Each one of their winners is going to get a chance to run at no charge in our series as well to go head-to-head against the top guys in the Road to Indy.
Wow, that's actually a pretty good deal, because I read a little blurb about, you know, WKA drivers being a part of that. That's a great idea because, you know, it gives them a chance to learn what some of these other racers are like, because they've probably been racing with the same guys for three, four years, and now they get to race with different drivers.
And we're looking to expand it even more. I've talked to the good folks at the series and at Cooper Tires. You know, we have a couple other ideas of how we can, you know, give a little back to the drivers that win those races. So they have a couple races to start out with. They're running Tuesday nights. The winner of that Tuesday night will run our Wednesday night show the following week. So if you've won one of their races, you get a chance to come and race with us. And again, it's the idea of connecting the Road to Indy deeper into the grassroots level, down to kart racing. We call, you know, the virtual ladder system, if you will. And to be honest, with these kids that are coming in from F4 and F1600, this is, you know, the E-Series is essentially a verbal, rather a virtual Chris Griffith test. Because we're literally giving the opportunity to run in front of team owners.
Do you know how many drivers the WKA Series is going to have?
I actually don't know the number of the WKA. No, a lot of the races were usually the high 30s, as I remember. So I haven't really talked to the folks at WKA yet. They're actually racing tonight, and I think the race starts at 8 o'clock Eastern time on Apex Racing TV. So if everybody wants to go watch it, they're on 8 o'clock on Tuesday night.
Yeah, how are you going to watch it tonight?
I'm not now. I thought I was, I could watch it on my phone, I guess. I'll burn through some minutes, but I have no, to fill everybody in, I'm down in California, such high winds, something happened to some electrical equipment, and where I am, there's no power. So I'm literally in the dark with no power, talking on my phone.
And that's the voice of Rob Howden, the Road to Indy insider. Charlie Ante joins me here on Inside Open Wheel. What drivers from the Road to Indy are going to run the TireRack.com Road to Indy E-Series?
Oh, there's a good lineup of guys that are getting ready to run, and that I think that's kind of cool that we've got these guys all lined up. And there's a bunch of drivers from Indy Lights. Let's start with Indy Pro. Braden Eaves is coming to run. Josh Green, Simon Sykes, Nikita Lastishin is going to be a part of it. Kiko Porto, of course, who was a winner last year in USF 2000. We've got Eli Navarro, who will be new this year, running for D-Force Racing. He was the Lucas Oil School of Racing Formula Car Series champion last year. Nate Aranda's back. Josh Pearson. Daniel Frost is actually going to run as well. You mentioned Dylan Christie already. Yuvan Sundaramurthy. We got a number of other drivers that are coming to play as well. Runner-up last year at Lucas Oil School of Racing Series, Matt Christians is going to run. Max Esterson as well from F1600. I think he's going to run British F1600 this year, but is planning on USF 2000 next year. And the Canadian champion, Matt Clark, can be part of the action as well. Lots of guys getting ready to come racing with us.
you mentioned Nikhil Lesotia, and I want you to keep that in the back of the mind, because near the end, I've got a question for that.
All right.
Are we going to see, like we saw last year, I believe it was the Road to Indy last year that did it, are we going to see drivers like a Peter Dempsey or former champions come in and do like a wild card round?
Well, here's the thing. So for the first five races, we're going to go straight drivers.
Okay.
Last year, we had some team owners come into play as well. We have an all-star race. Our sixth race on the schedule is our all-star invitational. At this point, we're still fine-tuning exactly what the concept is, but in the discussions we've had, we're looking at trying to go and get the guys that have been in the Road to Indy for the last number of years, graduates, other Indy Lights champions, that kind of thing. That's the goal. That's hopefully what we're going to put together to get Peter back out there, a number of other drivers, of course, back out there for round number six.
I wonder if you would ever consider having like sim racing celebrities come and join you for stuff like that.
Well, I don't think that's the concept for this idea, but I'll tell you, looking forward, the RE series is something that we're leaving wide open, Charlie, to kind of be flexible with, right? Yeah, maybe we start putting the best drivers in the Road to Indy against some of the best drivers of the PM18, because there's a number of the PM18 series that run around the country, Indy Pro 2000 around the world. So it's a car that gets used quite a bit. So we could always hook up with some of the best guys and see them go head to head against our drivers as well.
All right. Now, I mentioned Nikhil Lesotia, and the reason for that is you've got the connection to this question. There were reports that Exclusive Autosport sold two of their cars to GRG HMD Motorsport. Do we know if that's the case for this year?
Yes. The cars from Exclusive Autosport were sold to HMD Motorsport and the Global Racing Group. And in fact, those cars are probably still on the racetrack as we speak right now at WeatherTech Raceway in Laguna Seca. And Nikita Lesotia is part of that group with there right now. He's testing with those with HMD and GRG yesterday and today.
Okay, so are we going to see maybe five or six cars out of that stable, or are we thinking still the four?
I think still the four.
Okay.
Nikita is testing with them. I don't know that if they're ready to sign him or have a program in place. Obviously, today, it was great to see Linus Lundqvist get announced to the team. They already had Benjamin Pedersen and David Maluka, so they have three, so Nikita would be four. Is there a possibility for five there? Yes. And again, I don't know that I can't state or do I know that Nikita's locked with HMD. I just know that he's testing with them right now.
Yeah, that's an interesting development, because I know that we've been waiting for this Linus Lundqvist news for the past several weeks. But it's good to see that Lena signed up there. Let's see what else we got. USF 2000, Yvonne Sundamurthy, as you said, with PAP, signed up this week. We mentioned that earlier on. So the signings are coming. I've also been told that for F4, FR Americas, we're going to see some signings. So really, these past couple of weeks in really the Junior Formula Series, it's been stacked with signings, and I've been impressed with almost every one of them.
Yeah, there's a lot more coming. Because I know of at least a half a dozen that are confirmed, if not more, in USF 2000.
Okay.
There's a couple I'm hoping to see come out pretty soon in Indy Pro. And we're still hoping, actually, I believe, if you're listening to the podcast, another big announcement for Indy Lights on Thursday.
On Thursday, yes.
Cause there's my teaser.
Right, because we were waiting on, Rob, actually, the signing. We were told that Jordan Misick was going to sign his deal with Newman Wax at the end of the day, and that came through. So we know that, and there's a couple more coming out. But I think these next couple weeks are going to be very interesting for signings in junior formula racing.
Yeah, and for me, I want them to happen quick.
Yes.
Only because I want to see teams get locked in, because there's other guys out there, because you always hear of, all right, so it's just that Jeremy Scott, well, he's talking to this team and he's talking to that team and potentially could go to this team instead. It's one of those things that once the cars start getting filled, once the seats start getting filled, then things start getting done, right? Otherwise, a lot of the times the drivers will be playing each other back and forth, playing the teams back and forth. So the more seats that get confirmed, the more hectic it gets for other drivers to find seats and get locked and loaded. And it's just good for all the teams all around.
And so, Rob, speaking of all these driver signings, I was wondering if you have any idea where all of this momentum came from. I mean, last year was difficult for everyone, but especially you would think for sort of big dollar endeavors like running a race team. So all of these, you know, Indy Lights going up to you know 12, 13 plus cars, all these early signings in the other series. How did this all come about?
Well, I think, you know, if we start with USF 2000, it's just a solid program. You know, we're now into the fourth year with the car, or fifth, right? Fifth year with the USF 17 car. And I think that a lot of people are just seeing how successful it is in moving drivers up the ranks. You know, I think when you look at the rapid rise of an Oliver Askew and Arenas VK, I think a lot of people say, man, you know what? The opportunity is truly there for me to jump into the Road to Indy and get to IndyCar. And it's just the truth, right? I think we all know what, if you get into an F4 series of, you know, the half dozen F4 series that are around the world, that big jump then into the regional Formula 3, then FIA F3, the amount of money you're spending is a lot more than working up through the Road to Indy. And then to try to get to Formula 1, it's just so hard, to be real. I know everybody wants that Formula 1 opportunity, but it just seems, I think we all look at it and say, man, if you don't either have a manufacturer backing and have had it for a number of years and you're an academy driver, or if your father is not a billionaire, you're going to struggle to get a seat somewhere. And I think that people realize that, that there is a true opportunity in the Road to Indy to somehow get into the IndyCar program. And I just think that things are going good. One of the reasons why we've got 26 to potentially 28 USF 2000 is just the new teams, right? We got a couple of new teams coming in. Turn 3 Motorsports, as you know, Charles graduated down. They expanded from Indy Pro down into USF 2000. They've got two cars. Velocity Racing Development coming over from the F4 and Formula Regional Americas program to run cars in both USF 2000 for Eric Evans and in Indy Pro 2000 for Hunter Yeady. That's big. Trey Burke's coming in as a one-car team with Joe Dooling. Of course, Force Indy had one of their driver evaluation programs down at Circuit of the Americas with Miles Rowe and Nicholas Rivers. They're going to have their single-car team. Miller Vinatieri still with a single-car team. We're still hoping to see if Millennium Motorsports will be able to make it here to be a part of it as well. New teams, more excitement. And like I say, anytime that USF 2000 is big, it means there's a better pool to go to Indy Pro. The bigger pool in Indy Pro means a bigger pool in Indy Lights. And to be real, let's stand back and look at Indy Lights for a second. We stacked all the graduates up for a year, right, Charles? So, like, we didn't have a series last year, so we've got two scholarship drivers, two rookie crops essentially coming in. I think that worked really well with the momentum to bring a team like Carlin back in, RP Motorsports potentially coming and having a driver this year in Indy Lights. So, and then Global Motorsports, you know, the Global Racing Group rather, coming in, which is great.
It sounds like the snowball's on its way down the hill.
I'm really happy with the way everything's going right now, because I think the momentum for all the series is stepping up. I always go back, Charles, and look at the 2017 Pro Mazda series when it was the last year of that old Pro Formula Mazda car, right? It had been around for a lot of years, probably 18 years. Mm-hmm. And that last year, I think we only had 6 full-time drivers because everybody knew the new PM18 was coming in the next year. So that, in my mind, was a big player into why we didn't have a lot of drivers in Indy Lights in 18 and 19, because the simple mm-hmm. fact was we didn't have a pool. There were 6 drivers in Pro Mazda. How many guys are going to graduate? Literally one driver, I think, graduated from Pro Mazda, and that was the winner, Victor Franzoni. He had the scholarship and went to Juncos. Now we've got 14, 16, potentially, you know, whatever, 18 drivers in Indy Pro. That pool gets so much larger, and now we're seeing more excitement in Indy Lights.
Yeah, and not to mention, too, one thing that I'm really excited about is we're seeing another team with a full, you know, ladder from USF 2000 to now Indy Lights with Jay Howard joining Carlin. That's huge.
Yeah, the Jay Howard connection, of course, alongside Carlin is really big. You know, Jay won the championship in USF 2000 last year, moving up to Indy Pro 2000 this year, plus they've got the car in partnership with Carlin. I think that's great, man. Anytime you can have that kind of a connection from top to bottom, I think it's really good for the company. It's really good for the, you know, the optics of the series as well.
Rob, thanks for joining us. We know you got to get back to, you know, making a fire for light and food, but what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Well, obviously the way to follow me, and you can always DM me at Rob Howden on Twitter. Rob Howden on Facebook and Rob Howden Racing or RTI Insider on Instagram.
Rob Howden joining us once again. Congratulations on your new position within the Road to Indy. Really excited to see this, and I cannot wait to really start working with these kids. It's going to be so fun.
I appreciate it, Jeremy. I'm looking forward to getting into this thing. Like I said, it's been 6 weeks now, and it's been an uphill learning curve for sure. I look forward to kind of settling in more, getting a year under my belt, really being able to do a lot of long-range kind of successful programs we'll put together. Right now, I'm just really enjoying being involved in it because I love the Road to Indy so much, and to be involved at this level is something that I didn't think I was going to get the opportunity to do, so I'm very blessed.
Looking forward to it, man. Thanks.
You got it. Take care.
Coming up on next week's program, we welcome Indy Lights racer Toby Sowery, who just recently signed a deal to compete with Juncos Racing for the 2021 season, teaming with Indy Pro 2000 champion Stingray Rob. Freem is a safety company that's been growing in Europe, and now they have a new U.S. distributor, and we'll welcome Ryan Beechner to discuss their new partnership. We'll also recap the Coca-Cola Bottling Company of Kokomo Indy Elite Series race at Barber Motorsports Park, which, as always, you can catch on sim.tv Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern. So for Chris Demerit, Dylan Christie, Rob Howden, and our driver analyst, Charlie Ante, we thank you for listening to Inside Open Wheel. We'll see you next week. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter for the most up-to-date news on the complete ladder system in open wheel racing here in the United States. Inside Open Wheel is a production of Trackout Multimedia.